This is Speaking of Writers. I'm Steve Richards. In the spring of 1977, residents of a working-class neighborhood in Niagara Falls, New York, grew concerned when noxious-smelling substances began leaching into basements, floating in local streams, and pooling in puddles in backyards and playgrounds. Shortly after, children started suffering mysterious burns while playing outside, and then kids started getting sick, some really sick. What most parents didn't know was that their homes had been built next to what was once a giant pit called Love Canal. That decades earlier, Hooker Chemical, the largest employer in the city, had used the canal to dump barrels containing 20,000 tons of chemical waste, comprising of some of the most toxic compounds humans ever created. Hooker covered those barrels with earth and then sold the land to the city's Board of Education for a dollar, and the city built an elementary school and a playground directly on top of it. Now in the book Paradise Falls, the true story of an environmental catastrophe, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien tells the story of how an unlikely group of neighborhood women uncovered the secret and took on some of the most powerful men in the world, including the governor of New York, a multimillionaire industrialist, and the president of the United States, in order to get justice and literally save their families. Keith O'Brien is a former reporter for the Boston Globe and the New York Times bestselling author of Fly Girls and Outside Shot. His writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Politico. He makes his home in New Hampshire. Keith O'Brien joins me now. Keith, welcome to this program.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So how did you discover this story?
Well, so I'm a child of the 70s, and Love Canal is one of those memories logged deep inside my brain from that decade. And, you know, like a lot of people, I didn't know the particulars of it. I think most people today might recognize the name Love Canal, but they can't identify where it is. They don't really know what happened there. And even those, frankly, who do know the story don't know the depths of the human drama behind it. And so, you know, as I came out of my last book and started to think about what I wanted to do next, I really started to look at the decade of the 70s. And when I started doing that, I really went straight to Love Canal.
So this is in the Niagara Falls area in upstate New York. This company, Hooker Chemical, what did they do?
Hooker Chemical was one of the most productive and profitable chemical companies of the 20th century. They were the largest employer in the city of Niagara Falls, the largest industrial taxpayer. They were a great corporate citizen in many ways. They helped people put food on the table for decades in Niagara Falls. And they really helped create a lot of the products that people began to use in the 20th century. Everything from, latex paints to shoe leather to some of the weapons of war that were prominently used during World War I and World War II, including, famously, they created the chemical that was fundamental in mustard gas. But they had a record in Niagara Falls of dumping their residues and their waste often right in their own backyard. And by the 1970s, this process of getting rid of their waste and eliminating their waste began to create problems, not just in Niagara Falls, but in other municipalities across the country where Hooker had started to do work.
Chatting with Keith O'Brien here on Speaking of Writers, his book is Paradise Falls, the true story of an environmental catastrophe. So these two women, Lois Gibbs and Luella Kenny, they transformed themselves into environmental activists. Who were these two women?
So this place, Love Canal, was really an old canal, an abandoned canal, that had been used by Hooker in the 1940s and 50s and then gifted, essentially, to the city of Niagara Falls for a dollar in 1953. Niagara Falls Board of Education built a school on this, what it was there now, a landfill. And as Niagara Falls is growing, this became a very desirable place to live. It was a brand new school. It was really, in many ways, a brand new neighborhood on the outskirts of Niagara Falls. And Lois Gibbs and Luella Kenny bought homes in this neighborhood, as many young families did in the 1960s and 70s. These were affordable single-story bungalows, essentially, one, two, and three bedroom ranchers. And Luella Kenny and Lois Gibbs were raising their kids in this neighborhood. Lois was a stay-at-home mom and a mother of two kids. Luella Kenny was a working mom and a mother of three kids. And when the secrets literally started spilling out of the ground in 1977 and 1978, Lois Gibbs and Luella Kenny became radicalized, effectively. They suddenly became worried about the things that were buried in their neighborhood and what it was doing to their homes, what it was doing to their children, and they began to fight for their families and fight to save their families.
And they got noticed by Michael Brown, a columnist at the Niagara Gazette, who was committed to giving their cause voice in the press. Who were Bonnie Casper and Beverly Pagan?
So Bonnie Casper and Beverly Pagan were also key protagonists and key characters in this story. Bonnie Casper was a young legislative aide working for the congressman from Niagara Falls, who very early on, even before Lois Gibbs or Luella Kenny knew what was happening, became aware of these chemicals, 20,000 tons of chemicals buried in the heart of this neighborhood, and she began to push in Washington for change, and also later in Albany for change, holding elected officials and also state officials accountable for what was happening there. And Beverly Pagan was a biologist for a place called Roswell Park, which was a medical institute affiliated with the University at Buffalo. And because it was affiliated with the state university, Beverly Pagan was a state employee, essentially. And Beverly, very early on, started to work with residents in this neighborhood. She was quite concerned about the chemicals in the ground and began to speak out about it in a way that wasn't in step with what state officials were saying in Albany, all the way to the top of the health department, all the way to the top of the government, the governor of New York. And because of her outspoken stance that she took on what she believed was the risk to residents in the neighborhood, Beverly Pagan really paid an awful price. And, you know, they didn't have these terms back then, Steve, but, you know, we would describe today Beverly's workplace as a toxic workplace. Because of the things she started to say in the press, you know, she started to lose grant money at work. She started to lose opportunities at work. And she began to think that maybe she was even being followed. Maybe her mail was even being opened.
Keith, was this an inspiration for the Superfund Act?
It was indeed. So the Superfund Act was passed in late 1980, in the waning days of Jimmy Carter's presidency. And this was the sweeping legislation that empowered the federal government to come in and clean up polluted sites like this one. And, you know, were it not for these women primarily who stood up to save families in Niagara Falls and oftentimes to save their own children, this legislation very well may never have come to pass. And, you know, it has cleaned up hundreds of sites since 1980, since this legislation was enacted.
And what was your research like for this book, Keith?
Well, you know, I had a lot of resources at hand. Many of these protagonists are still alive, or they were at the time that I started doing the work on the book, so I could do interviews with folks. And I also had at my disposal, you know, thousands of pages of documents. But many of these documents that I unearthed have never seen the light of day before. You know, Bonnie Casper, the legislative aide for the congressman from Niagara Falls, you know, she kept boxes of memos and reports and letters back and forth from in the late 1970s. She kept those in her attic, in her basement. Barbara Blum, a former deputy director of the EPA in the 1970s, similarly kept boxes upon boxes of records in her storage unit in Washington, D.C. And Beverly Pagan, that scientist who took this stand against the state of New York, this stand that would ultimately cost her her job, Beverly, too, kept just file cabinets full of records just sitting in her home in Maine. And so, you know, in addition to what was already in the archives in Buffalo and in Niagara Falls and Albany and in Washington, D.C., and also in the courthouses, you know, I had at my disposal some of these records that had really never been seen before.
The book is Paradise Falls, The True Story of an Environmental Catastrophe. The author is Keith O'Brien. Keith, thank you so much for joining me.
Steve, thanks for having me.
And this is Speaking of Writers. I'm Steve Richards.